Today, pioneering DNA technology is being used to track some shy and elusive platypus in the Grampians. It appears bigger is better at the diesel and dirt demolition derby in regional South Australia. Even a centurion tank makes an appearance and will make vodkas and liqueurs from native Australian fruits and plants. We also introduce you to Lachlan Fanning, an unsung hero at the Gracemere Sale Yards in central Queensland.
Like, no one else can do a superior job as mine. My work ethic's 11 out of 10, eh? It stayed the art. Superior.
Lachlan's story coming up a bit later, but we'll begin today by pulling on the waders, looking for platypus in Western Victoria.
Platypus used to be really widespread throughout the Wimmera catchment, but declined fairly significantly over the last 10 to 15 years. And so as far as we know, this is the only resident population that remains in the catchment.
It's just before 7 o'clock in the morning, and it's still practically pitch black. Platypus researcher Josh Griffiths is standing at the rear of his ute with the back down. The light on his head is illuminating the tray. It's been a cold, but thankfully successful night for him here in the Grampians, because in his hands is a young female platypus.
So, she weighs 975 grams, and her total body length is 39.5 centimetres.
G'day, I'm Brett Worthington, and in front of me, Josh is taking part in a landmark study using pioneering environmental DNA technology to track platypus numbers in the Mackenzie River here in the Grampians National Park in Western Victoria. It's hoped the data they collect will help them better understand the impact prolonged dry weather and a spate of bushfires has had on platypus numbers in this area.
She's got a few ticks on her, but pretty low tick load. And her bill dimensions are 43 mils wide, 49 long, and her shield is 14 and a half.
It's often hours and sometimes days between catches, so the smile he's sporting from ear to ear while he measures this platypus pretty well sums up how he's feeling.
So we use specialised nets called fike nets. So we spent all afternoon yesterday getting them set up in a number of locations along the river. And then all last night we were checking them fairly regularly throughout the night until this morning, where we've packed a few up and thankfully caught one.
How rare is it that you would actually find one during a survey like this?
Look, there's lots of nights where I don't catch any, and they're quite long and cold and boring. But it does make those captures a bit more exciting, and certainly in this area where there's not huge numbers, you know, I think we're just happy to catch one. It's always nice to get more, but you know, one was a reasonable result, and the fact that it was a juvenile female, this year's juvenile, is a really good sign.
So when you collected that female, what was it that you do? What tests you perform on her before returning it back to the water?
Yeah, so we do take a number of standard measurements, look at its body condition and general health. And she was actually in quite good health for a juvenile, which is reasonably surprising. Shows there's a lot of food around there. We look at her weight and take some body measurements. She gets a microchip so that we, if we ever catch her again, we know who she is and where she's been. And then we also take a little DNA sample, so in the future we can look at the genetic health of the population. And it's a really small sample, so it's no impact on the animal at all.
Yeah, she's just getting a little DNA sample taken.
So the population genetic work has been around for a while now. There's some new DNA work that we're doing where we can look at taking water samples and trying to detect DNA that's been shed into that water. And that's very new. That's pioneering work that we've been working on. And the stuff that we're doing in the Mackenzie at the moment is the first time it's actually been used to look at platypus distribution.
So how do you go about collecting that kind of DNA?
So we just take a water sample and we try to get, you know, around 500 mils. It gets put through a really fine filter, and that traps all the organic matter, all the cellular material. And then back in the lab, that goes through a fairly lengthy process. And then you use specific markers for platypus to try to detect the platypus DNA in that. Every few hours through the night, we do the rounds and check them, because we don't want to leave them in the nets for too long. But it also catches other things like water rats, which is
oh,
what all this is for.
So looking at the species where we are here throughout the Grampians, what are the main threats that the platypus would have to deal with?
Yeah, so most recently, we had one of the worst droughts in living history. A decade-long drought, which for an aquatic species is fairly devastating. And that certainly has been probably the overarching factor in the last decade and the reason that they have disappeared from a lot of the Wimmera catchment. A lot of the other things like land use changes, clearing riparian vegetation, which is really important for platypus and their food supply. Even little things like probably not so much out here, but we find animals entangled in litter in some areas. Predation from foxes and dogs can be an issue. And also the way that we change flow regimes now. So the environmental flows that are being released down the Mackenzie River are really important. And that's one of the reasons why we still see animals in this river and not in many of the others.
Ready? Yeah. I might not even put it back in the bag. We'll probably go quite quickly.
Okay, yeah. It's probably like asking how long's a piece of string, but is it easy to quantify if conditions improve that you do start to see restocking happening?
We can, but it tends to be a long process. One, they're long-lived animals, so even seeing declines can take a while to be evident as well. I mean, these animals can live for 20 years. And they're also quite slow breeding, so, a female will tend to only have one young a year, potentially not breed every year, depending on how conditions are. And also, juvenile survival probably isn't that great either, so populations recovering is going to be a long process, and it might be... I mean, we are seeing signs in the Mackenzie that they are improving, and certainly the juvenile capture today is another little sign towards that. But it might be another 5 or 10 years until we can say that this is a secure population. At the moment, it remains very small and vulnerable. So, any more localised impacts that happen has a high potential of just wiping out the population.
There are souped-up tractors with enormous rear wheels and engines to match. Old headers are smashing into each other in the main arena. Even a restored Centurion tank is making an appearance. Welcome to Australia's petrolhead playground. Hello, I'm Danny Grindley, surrounded by about 8,000 cheering rev heads, all enjoying a day out in Keith, in the southeast corner of South Australia. It's the annual diesel and dirt demolition derby. I've never been to a demolition derby before, have never seen a modern-day tractor pull, so it's been an eye-opening experience walking amongst these machines today. Take the tractors, for example. These look nothing like the tractors you see on a farm, and their owners would never allow them near a paddock.
Just to start it up, it's probably $300 or $400 just to start it up. Put it this way, it's probably worth a three quarters of a house, close to around $200,000.
Brett Harris is an earth mover in Narracourt. His tractor is aptly named Blown Income. For those that understand what this means, Blown Income has a TFX 540 cubic inch motor with 3,000 horsepower, and she weighs 900 kilograms. Obviously, tractor pulling hasn't always looked like this, but every year it gets that little bit more ridiculous.
It started probably approximately 40 years ago with farm tractors, and the guys got enthused and said, how can I beat my neighbour and so forth, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And now only thing that looks like a tractor is the drawbar.
Someone said to me that it costs you maybe a few grand every time you bring this out.
Yeah, it can range anywhere from $3,500 to $5,000 a weekend.
Right. So how much is on offer for the winnings today?
I'll be lucky I'll get a cup and probably about $30.
Right, okay. So you're not here for the cash. What is it?
We're here just to have great fun with my mates and, put a show on for the crowd.
So you've won your local event, that's always good. How do you go in a national level?
In the national event, we're running second. We didn't do the first one because we had engine problems, but we've had 21 passes and we've had 19 wins. Overseas, it's huge. America, they pull 3 or 4 times a week all year round. And Europe, they do the same. And here, Australia is just very small. We only do 10 weekends a year.
So have you been over there?
Yes, I was there 2 years ago.
Competing or just having a look?
No, we're just having a look. We want to take this over in 2 years' time. When this machine ran in America in 95, it was number one. And we've done quite a few adjustments to keep up with the times and hope we can go back there and do it again.
How serious is this in terms of a competition?
It's all fun and games until the visor shuts, then it's on.
Yeah, right. You obviously spend a lot of money on it.
Oh, it's a hobby. I own my own business since I was 17, and now it's my time to play.
Brett, you've obviously got too much money. Can I borrow some cash? I'm a bit behind on the rent, actually.
The money? No, it's gone and blown income, so there's no money.
Certainly is. Speaking of throwing away money, Keith lays claim to Australia's only header demolition derby. What's that, you ask? Oh, just 15 headers ramming into each other until there's only one left standing. That last man standing this year was a Keith local, Ryan McDonald, in a Case 1660 header.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried. There was mice poo and stuff coming out the ceiling. I was getting covered in dirt and let's just hold on and enjoy the ride.
What was your tactic today?
Make sure no one was going to get me from behind, so just swing around on the turn brakes and just line them up.
So these aren't headers as they are found in the paddock. You've done a lot to jazz them up, would I say?
Yeah, we beefed it up, put supports in here and there. Filled up a feed house full of concrete that no one knowed about, so anyway, probably cheating, but...
Where have you put the concrete?
You know, where everything goes in, we filled her up with concrete, it's probably, I don't know, might be a couple tonne there.
So that's just to give it the bit of grounding, hold it down and strength?
Yeah, well, the idea was to get the weight over the front wheels and then, there's less weight on the axle, so if the axle does break, then you can still use the turn brakes and swing it around.
Were there rules about what you can do to your header, or...?
It's pretty loose-ended, but, you know, just got to have the front certain height and make sure it's got all the safety sort of stuff.
And what do you get for risking your life and coming out on top?
I think it's $1,000 cash. Prize money, probably get put on the bar and won't see any of it.
When Keith Show Society first ran this event 3 years ago, it was just a few beefed up lawnmowers going at it. Then the header derby was added and that was a hit. But this year, show president Glenn Simpson had to ramp it up again. Tell me about this tank. Where did that come from?
Well, it went to Vietnam and then was brought back and ended up in Kingston. Sat there for years, then went to Coomanduk, and we managed to source it from there and got a new motor and a heap of restoration, sandblasted and painted, and every mate of mine got the call, mechanic or non-mechanic, to help and paint, and a lot of steak was eaten over the shed and a lot of beer drunk. And here we are. It was good to have a date, though, to have it finished by. We had six cars there and managed to drive over most of them. There was a replica police car came out with sirens and lights flashing, and we had some thieves break into the tank and kick them out and then drive over the police car. And we had a caravan we tried to drive over, but the commander was probably going to cop a bit of debris, so we backed out of that.
I was wondering about the caravan, but it did get flattened in the end.
The header. A header went through the caravan.
You probably spent some hard yards having to prepare for this day, you poor thing, having to drive over some cars at home.
Yeah, that was pretty hard. Tough. I had a lot of mates ring up and, you know, want to bring cars out. I said, bring petrol as well. It uses like a couple hundred litres an hour.
How much is a tank worth these days?
Ah, we paid about 20 grand for that one, but owes us a whisker more than that now.
Do you have a wife?
Yes, Tanya.
And how does Tanya feel about all of these toys?
It gets brought up quite often when she's going near a jewellery shop.
Well, that's it. It's only fair. So she has her own hobbies. You've got yours.
Sounds like it, doesn't it? Yes.
That's a lot of jewellery, though.
It is. And how much fun can you have with jewellery?
Glenn Simpson, president of the Keith Show Society and the owner of that Centurion tank. Thanks to Danny Grindlay for bringing us that report from her very first diesel and dirt demolition derby. I'm sure she'll be back for more. Still to come on Rural Reporter today, we're off to Gracemere Sale Yards to meet Lachlan Fanning, and a fruit farmer turns fermenter in southeast Queensland.
It was Ala, actually, because she's a Russian background, and she said, I wouldn't mind making some schnapps and liqueurs. And I said, well, that's a bit novel. We then proceeded to teach ourselves how to use this beautiful fruit to ferment it and to make all sorts of wonderful schnapps, liqueurs and things with it.
If you're a fruit farmer and you're tired of getting low prices for your produce, well, here's an idea. Why not turn it into alcohol? That's what one southeast Queensland farmer has done, and he hasn't looked back. Hello, I'm Marty McCarthy at Mount Tambourine in the hinterland to the west of the Gold Coast, where Michael Ward and his Russian wife Ulla have set up home on a small orchard block. It's here that they produce a range of vodkas and liqueurs using native Australian ingredients like lemon myrtle and Davison plums. Michael explains how he went from farming to fermenting.
Well, I found this rundown avocado and citrus orchard on the mountain. I thought, wow, that'd be great, you know, a bit of an opportunity to get into the agricultural side of things, which is, you know, it'd be fantastic. So we bought it. And we got our first lot of citrus. I'll never forget. We went down the coast to, I don't know where it was, one of the big supermarkets, Coles or Woolies. They looked at this tray of oranges and lemons and limes that we took down there, and they said, oh, we couldn't possibly take these. I said, what do you mean? You haven't even bloody tasted them. They're awesome, which they were. Oh, no, all the tits and bumps and lumps and all the abrasions on there. No, we couldn't possibly sell those.
So what next? You learnt that farming was maybe a little bit too hard, a little bit too particular. What was the option?
Farming wasn't too hard, but we just didn't want to spray and all, you know, and the supermarkets, the way they lorded over, like the little farm and grower, I thought, I don't need this.
Out in your garden now, we're standing amongst a number of trees, all producing fruit that you use in your liqueurs. What have we got around us?
Well, where we're standing right here is a native called Backhausia citriodora, which, of course, it means lemon myrtle. And the exciting part of this particular tree is the leaf. The leaf contains 94% citral, which is more than in a lemon. It's a native tree. It's awesome. And so we use the leaves to make this incredible vodka, and we also use it to make a liqueur.
I understand you've become a little bit of a lifeline for some local farmers when there's particular gluts in certain industries. They come to you with all their extra fruit.
We do get a few. One farmer that stands out to most of the others is Hex Smith. He's down at Coogee, northern New South Wales, and he grows Davison plum. Anyway, the customer, when he turned up with the fruit, the customer said, oh, I don't want it. So poor old Heck, he didn't know what the hell to do it. So anyway, somebody told him about us. He rang us up and he said, I've got all this fruit and I don't know what the hell to do. And someone said, you might be able to help me. I said, well, look, what's it called? Davison plum. And I hadn't really heard of it, to be honest. It's Aboriginal bush tucker. I knew that, which was awesome stuff. I knew it was pretty sour. But I said, well, look, just bring us 5 kilos and we'll play around with it. Well, he brought the whole ruddy 150 kilos. And anyway, we played around and, well, cutting a long short, we made this liqueur from these Davison and plums, and we called it Wild Forest Plum. It's just a lovely story where we could help this farmer who's well over 90 years of age, I might add, and he's just a beautiful man, and we've just got a friendship now, and you know, little stories like that are just lovely stories.
Well, Michael, it's 6:30 a.m, but I'm going to have to ask you to take me inside and to show me some of your native vodkas.
Well, I think I've been waiting for you to say that for the last 20 minutes. That's a great idea. Let's do it. What we've got here, Marty, is this lemon myrtle vodka, which we were talking about when we just smelt the leaves. So let's have a toast. And what we normally say, because of Allah's Russian background, we normally say, na zdorovya, which cheers, good health in Russian. So, na zdorovya, down the hatch. No, I'm just dobbing you in, yo. He only had about 10 mil. Good lad, Marty.
I like working in the sale yards because it gets me out of the house, gives me a bit of good exercise and doing the work. The hard work, yeah.
He's a hard-working, reliable, good kid.
Good bloke. Good fella.
The sale yards wouldn't be able to perform and run without the superior working ability that Lockie's got.
Cattle sale yards can be a really dirty place. With thousands of animals being bought and sold in any one week, someone has to be on hand to clean up all that manure. At the Gracemere Sale Yards in central Queensland, that someone is Lachlan Fenning.
I'm Lachlan Fenning, worker at the Gracemere Sale Yards. Hose the pens and draft and clean up all the rubbish.
Hello, I'm Amy McCosker. A horse running accident when he was 11 might have left Lachlan with a physical disability, but it doesn't appear to be slowing him down. He's managing to hold down this part-time job and study for a uni degree at the same time.
Go to work and at 4:30 start hosing pens and clean up the yards and clean the boards down.
It's a huge day.
Yeah.
Does it tire you out?
No. Just keep going.
And what about the people that you work with? Do you enjoy?
Yeah, they're real good. They're all good mates and they're easy to work with and quality, yeah.
Do you kind of feel like you're a part of a team? Or?
Yeah. Teamwork. Working together. Yeah, we all work together like spokes inside a wheel to roll the production line all the way to success. We're a good team. Without me cleaning the pens, the cattle won't be shown to their superior ability, allowing the agents to get the most superior price for their cattle. It was in 2005, Mother's Day. We woke up all joyful and gave Mum her presents for Mother's Day, and then we had bacon and eggs and went to our cousin's property and got on the horses. I went on a new horse that hadn't been ridden on the property before. And then while we were out in the paddock, the horse bolted and I fell off. And then Mum had to stay there and roll me over into the safety position. I was in a coma for 2 weeks. I was 11 years old at this stage. Can't even remember the footy games I played in the years before that. About the first week in term 4 of grade 12, Dad suggested, "Hey, look, why don't you go work at the Gracemere sale yards?" And I'm like, why would I resort to a blue-collar job shit-kicking at the Gracemere sale yards? But it's worked out well.
The dad in question is Cormac Fenning, one of the livestock agents operating at the Gracemere sale yards.
He's a great kid. Works very hard, sometimes a bit too hard, I think. But he certainly does a good job, and I know that our agents appreciate what he does. They certainly think he's a bit of a character. They all like, you know, how he works, and, you know, he certainly does do a bit of chit-chatting, but it's mainly all work. So if you're working there, you're certainly appreciated.
And what about Lockie's uni? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, very proud. You know, third-year uni student. A fair few people don't realise he does both jobs. So going to uni for 3 years and also doing the job at the same time, yeah, sort of fills in his week pretty much, yeah, so.
He must be really proud.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, very proud. Yeah. Extremely.
Yeah, I've chosen to go to uni and do accounting because it'll give me more experience to help with the family business and...
Do you think that once you've got your degree, you'll stop with working at the sale yards?
Working at the sale yards? I don't know. Maybe, but they've got no one else there to help them. Like, no one else can do a superior job as mine. My work ethic's 11 out of 10, eh? It's state the art. Superior.
A champion effort there from Lachlan Fenning, keeping the pens at the Gracemere sale yards clean and tidy, while also studying full-time for his accountancy degree. Amy McCosker with that story, and Amy has made an extraordinary video of Lachlan in action. It's well worth spending some time finding it. You can do that at abc.net.au/open.